Sounds like many of you had an enjoyable morning. Now that that's done with, we can all finally just enjoy some power electronics. No more stress. Okay, today we're going to continue on and wrap up our generalized derivation of the sinusoidal approximation for AC link converters. Last time we introduced this, started talking about in general, this sinusoidal analysis is going to approximate the waveforms of our converter by saying that somehow in this tank, however it's configured, I have a high Q resonance that is going to pick off really just the fundamental component of any waveforms in the converter, attenuate everything else, so I can get a good approximation to the behavior of this converter by modeling only the sinusoidal element at the switching frequency. Okay. I've got from any sort of switching action, I'm going to have switching frequency components and harmonics. We're approximating that the tank is going to do a good job of attenuating all of those harmonics. Okay. So under that approximation, we went through and derived a model for the inverter. We said this inverter at 50% duty cycle generates the square wave. I do a Fourier series expansion of that and only take the first term. Can model what the fundamental component of that is. Then I can do the same for the primary current. Assume that's purely sinusoidal and reflect that back to get an input current. I have expressions for both of those. That meant that our equivalent full bridge inverter model under the sinusoidal approximation looks something like this, where what's actually applied to the tank is just a sinusoidal source of an amplitude 4 over pi times the input. And then we get this 2 over pi IP1 with a cosine term for our input current. This phi in phase of the input current depends on what's loading this. When we apply this voltage, sort of phase of the current, depend on the phase of the equivalent impedance seen here, we'll look into in a moment. Similarly, this IP1 amplitude of this current depends on the amplitude of whatever impedance is loading the circuit. So we can't solve those in isolation, but we can say that this relationship holds, and we checked that that was valid at the end of class by saying, do I have power balance on this thing? This is just a full bridge inverter. Average input power should be equal to average output power because I don't store any energy on average. This thing does not have the ability to source or sink internally any energy. Okay. So now we're going to do the rectifier, which we've done most of the heavy lifting for. We're going to see that waveforms and averaging that we're going to do here fall out the same as we did in the inverter, so we can just apply those results again. Once we have those two, then we can look at the tank and solve converter operation quite quickly. Okay. So I'm going to sketch the voltage VS in the current IS of this diode rectifier. And I'm going to assume that this diode rectifier is designed in such a way that this output capacitance CF is some large filter element. Which means that my Vout approximately just DC over any switching period. It's a non-resonant element. It's just bulk cap at the output. What that's going to do is make this diode bridge voltage clamped, which means that the voltage that I'm going to see at Vs is going to be a square wave, goes between V out and minus C out, and it's going to switch whenever the polarity of the current IS changes. I assume these are ideal diodes. Then if the current IS is positive, a 4 bias, top left and bottom right diode, and have V out applied back to VS, negative, bottom left and top right, and get negative V out. Okay. I'm also approximating diodes as ideal. Then I'll get that type of behavior. Okay. given that the voltage depends on the current, I'm going to sketch the current first. And that current, similar to IP1, the fundamental of IS, IS1 is going to depend on what's going on with the tank, going to depend on other things in this diode rectifier. But generally, I will have in my fundamental approximation an IS1, sinusoidal approximation, which is some sinusoid that has a phase shift, potentially, let's call this CPS, which is just saying that this current is not necessarily in any kind of fixed alignment with what's going on back here on the inverter. Depending on the impedance of the tank, it could be leading, lagging, could be whatever. It's not zero phase. If I've defined my zero phase as relative to the primary side of the inverter voltage. So this whole thing will be some arbitrary phase shift later and will be a sinusoid, some amplitude at the switching frequency. Okay. Then if that is my current IS, then my voltage VS is going to be either V out or minus V out. And I'm going to commutate whenever the polarity of this current changes if I assume I have ideal diodes. Okay. Then that is my VS. Sinusoidal approximation, I'm going to approximate this as VS1, where I consider only the fundamental component of that square wave, which looks something like this. It'll be in phase and it'll be in an amplitude, which I will find by doing a Fourier series expansion of this square wave and taking only the first component of that. Well, that's what we did last time for the inverter. We had a square wave, took Fourier series, took the first component. It was 4 over pi times whatever the value of that square wave is. So the amplitude of VS1 is going to be 4 over pi V out. No problem. VS1 is going to be 4 over pi times V out sine omega ST minus whatever this phase is. Okay, so my IS1, as I've drawn it, let's say this is some amplitude. The sine of omega T minus Dn. So the other thing I might want to solve about the behavior is what is my output current. My output current is going to be IS1, just rectified according to which diodes are on. The diodes commutate at the zero crossings because we've approximated them as ideal diodes. So it means it's just going to be a true rectification of this. It's just going to be the absolute value of IS1. My I out look like this. And then if I want to know what my DC output current is, capital I out or average I out, that's integral over any period of I out dt. And this again is something we already solved. So we did this, I guess in the slide I cut out. I apologize for that. Already to solve the input current, it was arrived by averaging a rectified sine wave of amplitude IP1, where I had some phase between the voltage and current. In my inverter, I was using MOSFET devices. I wasn't guaranteed that the voltage or currents are in phase. MOSFET switch when you tell them to switch, diode switch when the current polarity changes. Right? So I had this potential for some phase between the voltage and current. In the diode case, voltage and current are in phase. So phi n is always zero. So this term goes to one. And my average output current is going to be 2/π times whatever the amplitude is of this IS1. And same derivation as the input current. Okay. So that's a diode model. Look at one other thing that I may be interested in knowing now that I know the output current, I out, which is the DC output current here. I can solve what is V out. V out is what? Well, if this is the average current at this point, I know I have zero average current in the capacitor in any steady state. So it's also the average current going to the load. V out is just going to be I out times R, which is 2/π IS1 times R. By cap charge balance. I call it CF. Okay, so what's my equivalent circuit? Well, I've got some voltage applied back to the tank that I could model as a sinusoidal voltage source. That's going to be linked with some DC source flowing into the output, which is my equivalent load. I can actually simplify this a little bit. I'm going to do so by looking at what is VS1 over IS1. Okay, let's derive both of those. So IS1, this thing, capital IS1, sine of omega ST minus VPS. VS1, 4/π V out times that same sine. Means that these two terms are going to cancel. And I'll have 4/π V out over IS1. V out, I just said, is 2/π IS1 times R. If I make that replacement, I'll have 4/π times 2/π IS1 R over IS1. My IS1s cancel, and I'm going to end up with 8/π squared times R. That was the ratio of VS1 and IS1, the ratio of the voltage and current here at the input of the diode rectifier, which means that my diode rectifier to the rest of the circuit, the input and the sink, just looks like some equivalent resistance value scaled version of the output resistance. As I model this diode rectifier, my VS1, my IS1, what I'm going to see is an equivalent resistance that I'll call RE. Looks like 8 over pi squared times R. And then at the output, I'll just see this DC current, I out, the 2 over pi IS1. Flowing to my output. Here. Okay. Questions on that? Okay. The next slide, I'm just going to make a couple comments that the derivation is going to follow same steps, similar analysis, but be slightly different depending on the implementation of this. Okay. So I can have many different types of rectifiers. Here's just two of them that I'm going to comment on. No matter how I implement this inverter and rectifier, I can go through and do my Fourier series approximation to get a fundamental and do my averaging on the DC side. Okay. It'll yield slightly different results depending on the implementation. So some that you might see, this is still a full bridge diode rectifier, but if I have some large filter element loading it, which is an inductor rather than directly a capacitor loading the diode bridge, means that rather than having a clamped voltage, I have a clamped current. So I have a constant current here. I assume that's a filter element that in steady state has negligible ripple. It means that what comes back is going to be a square wave of current rather than a square wave of voltage. So the voltage VS is going to look sinusoidal coming out of the tank. The current's going to be a square wave. I'm going to get that 4 over pi term in the current instead of in the voltage. Here. Now, because the voltage isn't clamped, VS is not just going to jump between V out and minus V out. It can be something else with that voltage drop showing across the inductor. The inductor is going to dictate that the current is a square wave now. Okay. And then you can flip things around. You can kind of intuit what that's going to look like, saying that each step in the derivation is the dual of the one previously. And you're going to get another relationship there. Okay. But it'll slightly change the results, the numbers in the model. Okay. If we have an active bridge, as we've looked at previously for our SRC, when we were analyzing using state plane analysis, this one is still loaded by a large filter capacitor, so it's still going to generate a square wave of VS. The difference is going to be I'm not guaranteed to have these devices switch right at the zero crossing. They switch whenever I tell them to switch. So I could have some arbitrary phase between voltage and current going into this thing. Don't lock those two at zero like I do with the diode bridge. What does that mean in this derivation? Well, to get coefficients, and now I'm not going to be guaranteed to have the same phase on the voltage and current, which means that when I divide these things out, I'm going to end up with some phase left over, and I'm going to have an equivalent load, which is some equivalent impedance. I control these things in a way to push the switching of these devices out of phase with the incoming current, then I'm going to get some equivalent load still, but it's not going to be purely resistive. It's going to have some reactive component to it, either inductive or capacitive, depending on whether I'm leading or lagging with my phase there. Okay. And more out of phase I go, it's going to influence the amplitude of this overall thing. What is the amplitude of RE and what is the amplitude of the reactive component? Okay. As far as relevance, this sort of thing, seen a lot previously. Early on in these resonant converters, really hyped for battery chargers, significant voltage requiring isolation. So you could have something with a transformer in the middle, highly efficient, having constant current output, a good thing for a battery. So different versions, particularly with the parallel resonant converter that we'll look at shortly, but with the current-driven output rectifier, common. Active rectifiers have some interest in giving you an extra control freedom. Those are gaining a lot of favor in these resonant converters and different applications by allowing you to adjust and give a reactive type load. You can do things like dynamically change the tuning of your tank. You did an SRC and you designed it to resonate a certain switching frequency. Well, if you're applying back some reactive load, that reactive load is going to alter that resonant frequency. You can use that to gain various advantages in the characteristics of the converter. One way that that's being actively researched here and at other universities is in wireless power transfer systems, which we'll talk about a little bit, but are AC link type converters. Where I have an inverter and a rectifier and then some passive components in between. Particularly in a wireless power transfer system, on inductive power transfer, I have coils. Those coils magnetically coupled. If anything around, if there's metal around, if there's anything in between those coils, I get some additional reactive loading. If I have an active rectifier, I can push it out of phase to compensate out any of that additional parasitic reactance. Okay. Step last. Okay, looking with just the voltage clamp diode rectifier, now that we've solved the inverter and the rectifier, all I've got left is this tank in the middle. Tank in the middle is purely passive. I have no problem dealing with that with a single frequency going through it. Okay, so our complete model looks like this, where I'm going to write down the results that we derived. So IG is 2IP1 over pi cosine phi n. VP is 4 over pi VG sine omega ST. RE is 8 over pi squared R. I out is 2 over pi IS1. Well, I have a few things in here, namely the in IS1 IP1. they're going to be determined by putting everything together. So I can't just look at the inverter and figure out what this IP one is. It depends on how this source is loaded by everything else. Right? But now I have the tools I need to analyze this. Since everything is single frequency, and this tank is purely passive, nothing but inductances, capacitances, and transformers. Then I can model what's going on by just looking at the behaviors of this tank on kind of an equivalent basis. Say, what is the input impedance of the tank? What is the output impedance of the tank? And generally, if we're sticking with the book's notation in chapter 19, Z out is defined including this load resistance. And then what is the transfer function of the tank, H of S. Okay. So if I know those things about the tank, then I've completely defined its behaviors in this circuit, and I can analyze behaviors of this converter DC to DC, independent of exactly what's going on in here, just by looking at these. That'll give us a basis for comparison. I say I've got a full bridge MOSFET inverter, a diode rectifier. I can now swap out different tanks by looking at different transfer functions, input impedances and output impedances, and compare how these different tanks are going to behave. Okay. We can actually, at this point, with these things defined, derive what is the conversion ratio of this converter. M is the out over VG. And I'm going to do so by starting at V out and just walking my way back here. Okay. So if I start at V out, given what I know, V out, all I can really say is that V out over R is I out. So it means I can get from V out to I out. And that looks like R. Now I'm at I out. I have a relationship between I out and IS1. You get from I out to IS1. I out over IS1 is 2 over pi. From IS1 amplitude of this thing here, I can get to VS1, and that IS1 flows through resistance RE, so the voltage is going to be 8 over pi squared R. And IS1 over VS1 is the inverse of that, so it'll be 1 over 8 over pi squared R. Then from VS1, I can get to VP1 by saying this is the tank transfer function from input to output. So that is whatever the magnitude of the tank transfer function is at the switching frequency. And then from VP1, amplitude of this thing, I can get back to VG, where VP1 is 4 over pi VG. VP1 will look like 4 over pi. What do I get? I'm going to have between these two, 8 over pi squared. I have a 1 over 8 over pi squared. So this is going to cancel this. And then I have R times 1 over R. My equivalent transfer function is just equivalent conversion ratio. Keep in mind that this conversion ratio, as well as input impedance, output impedance, these characteristics of the tank, depend on what this RE is, which is a scaled version of my load resistance. This does not mean that this is going to stay constant for changing load. It also will change if I change the switching frequency, right? This model, as we've done it, that's kind of the control we have. In theory, we could have additional control if we start changing the duty cycle of the inverter here, so that instead of being 50% duty cycle, I allow that duty cycle to be a variable. That'll go back and change this 4/pi result, depending on what that duty cycle is, change our model. Also, if I have an active rectifier, and I can control its duty cycle, phase shift, and add additional control variables. But as we've derived it, we have switching frequency that I can change around, and then load, which could potentially be changing independent of my control, to alter the characteristics here. Questions on that? Okay. So here, I just want to look at generally the behavior of a resonant converter like this. Okay. I'm eventually going to be plotting what is the relationship between the magnitude of VS and the magnitude of IS. So I look at how the behavior here varies with different load resistance. What does my output port look like? Is this thing really a good voltage source, like a typical PWM DC-DC, like a buck converter, does it have some other behavior? So the way I'm gonna do that, I'm just gonna look at the center of this equivalent model, not worry about just scale factors as things go from DC to AC and AC back to DC. If I wanted to go to the actual output port, there'd be factors of 8/pi and 4/pi. Essentially cancel each other out. If I just look at this part of the circuit, again, assume that what's in this tank is purely reactive elements. You know, if this is just a linear circuit of inductances and capacitances and everything in there, some imaginary impedance, that's fully linear, then I can reduce this model using Thevenin equivalent, something that just looks like this. Where I'm doing a Thevenin equivalent at this port so that I retain VS and IS. This voltage source and series impedance are going to be things that are derived parameters that model the equivalent behavior of this. That's going to be valid as long as this is some linear circuit in here with just passive elements, no switches, no active elements in there. Okay. So what are the values of this source, this series impedance? So back to my general Thevenin equivalent, how do I figure those out? I would say, okay, let me test from this port that I'm doing my equivalent model from. I'll remove RE just have an open, figure out what the voltage is here, and that's this voltage, right? I remove RE, the voltage here will be the source. That value I'm going to call VOC, or an open circuit voltage, the whatever VS would be if I had an open infinite load resistance. Okay. Then this series impedance, there's the book's notation, I'm going to call it ZO0. General Thevenin analysis, what I would do is short here, figure out what the short circuit current is, and then do VOC over ISC, the value of this impedance. Right? The ZO0, what it refers to is it is then the output impedance, looking back into the circuit, if RE is set to zero. So ZO, and then the zero says what my load is. Okay. So RE is set to zero, I short it, and then I look at the impedance going back that way. Same thing. Okay. Make sense so far? Okay. So then, if I want to look at what's going on at this output port, what is VS? Now I've reduced this down to where I just have an impedance divider. I can say it's VOC times RE over RE plus ZO0. Okay. VOC and RE are scalar values. These are real things, single numbers. VS, ZO0, or potentially have some phase and magnitude or phasor type components. Okay. So what I'm going to look at is taking the magnitude of this thing and squaring it on both sides here. Here I'm doing the magnitude squared. For VOC, that's just going to be a number. That's an amplitude, and that's going to be VOC squared. Need more space. Rewrite up here. Then for this thing, if RE and ZO0 are both complex numbers, I need to do some computation there. But based on how I've derived it, RE is a real value. And because I said this tank is purely reactive and ZO0 is purely imaginary, so I can say that this thing becomes RE squared over RE squared plus ZO0 squared. Because I have my real and my imaginary numbers separate on this. Okay. So where can I go with this? Now I'm gonna multiply the thing over to the left side. So give me magnitude of VS squared times RE squared plus magnitude of VS squared times magnitude of ZO0 squared is equal to VOC squared RE squared. And then I'll divide this term over to the left, get magnitude of VS squared VOC squared plus magnitude of the S squared 0, 0 over this is almost starting to take a form where it looks like writing all this out may be useful. The final thing I'm going to do to adjust here is say this term, if I divide it up in a certain way and say, let me take this magnitude of Vs squared divided by Re squared, that is this voltage and this resistance. So the square of this voltage divided by that resistance is the square of Is, magnitude of this current. Then I have the open circuit voltage and this impedance, dividing those and squaring it. That is, if I do this voltage divided by this impedance, that's the current when RE goes to a short. That's the short circuit current that this thing can produce. ISC. Okay. What is this on my IS VS axis? Close. You look back at state plane, we had circles, but that's because we normalized in a very certain way, right? Here, I have no guarantee that this is normalized in some certain way, so this is in general just an ellipsoid. Okay. Kind of arc. It's going to look like from a peak of ISC on current and a peak of VOC on voltage. And in this quadrant, I'm going to have a relationship that looks like this. I have no offset in the center because I'm not subtracting anything from these terms. So that is the output characteristic of my resonant converter. Do I like that output characteristic? Am I happy with that? I don't know. So let's say my load is some resistance. What's the behavior of a resistance on a current versus voltage axis? So RE varies. The load line for a specific load, RE. Again, RE is just a scaled version of the actual load resistance R, divided by 8 over pi squared. Shift this a little bit, but this will be the behavior at this port rather than at the output port. If I look at the two of these, that means this would be my DC operating point. Wherever my load characteristic and my output characteristic overlap, it's going to be where this converter operates. Now, if my resistance changes to a much bigger value, I'll operate here. If it changes to a much smaller value, I'll operate here. It means my output voltage is going to vary quite significantly depending on the value of my load resistance. Okay. So this is, for most applications, not an output characteristic that I'm super happy with. Okay. I can address this via control, but I'm going to need a lot of control. I look back at something like a PWM type buck converter. What does my output characteristic look like? Well, it's something that's, I'm going to draw it out here, nearly a vertical line, right? I go at one control point, I have a 6 duty cycle. My output is very nearly D times VG, which stays constant independent of load. I start modeling losses, it deviates a little bit. Might get a characteristic that looks kind of like this. But to keep a constant voltage at the output, I'm going to need to do relatively little control action, at least at steady state. Here, keep a constant output voltage, I'm going to need to do a lot of control. Okay? And my control comes in the form for what we've derived of changing this switching frequency in order to change the impedance of the tank, which then alters the values of VOC and ISC. This general relationship still holds, but I change these two values, and I can change them to give me ellipsoid somewhere out here and ellipsoid somewhere down here. If I want to keep a constant voltage as the load is changing, for example, this voltage here, as I jump to this resistance, I would have to change switching frequency to get down onto the smaller ellipsoid so that the new load keep a constant voltage. Okay. Alternately, buck converter, if I just give it a constant duty cycle, as the load changes within some reasonable range, I'm not going to have a whole lot of error. My output voltage is going to stay almost the same thing. A resonant converter, if I give it a constant switching frequency and load changes all over the place, my voltage is going to change all over the place. Okay. That's going to put constraints on my control action. Okay. What I want to do next is start looking at now from what we have in our equivalent model, just looking at different tanks, different implementations, whether a series resonant or parallel resonant or LLC type tank or anything else. What can I conclude about the operation of this converter and the advantageous or disadvantageous characteristics of that tank purely by looking at the tank itself and understanding how it's going to operate in this resonant converter? Okay. And so given time, we'll start that on Monday.